Hello and welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Acting President Shavkat Mirziyoyev is moving very fast in Uzbekistan. Within days of assuming the office of the acting presidency, he has started massive restructuring of his administration, brought back some controversial names to the office, and yes, now he is preparing for an elections, which is outcome already predicted. The question is, what do his initial steps say about his direction, and what do those steps mean to Uzbekistan and its current needs? In this episode of Majlis Central Asia podcast, we will revisit Uzbekistan under acting president Shavkat Mirziyoyev. To discuss the subject, I have Sohrabjon Ismailov, an independent observer and legal expert who, among others, is the founder of the expert working group back in his days in Uzbekistan. Now, Sohrab lives in New York City. Sohrab, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you, Sohrab. Joining us from UK is Dr. David Lewis, who is the senior lecturer at the Exeter University and formerly Central Asia director at the International Crisis Group with extensive field expertise in the region, including Uzbekistan. Dr. Lewis, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Very nice to have you, Dr. Lewis. From Prague, my colleagues Alisher Sadiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Kishlak Owazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, are also joining us. Bruce and Alisher, welcome to the Majlis.
Hello, hello.
Again, welcome, gentlemen, to the Majlis. It's been 2 weeks since Mirziyoyev is officially in power as an acting president in Uzbekistan. Although, Alisher, it's a short time, but we have seen he is moving fast, taking up a number of issues, including adjustment in his administration. Let's start with you, Alisher. What are the highlights of his recent steps?
Actually, before discussing his steps, there's one question that I'm trying to find a good answer.
Okay.
The question is how to call Mr. Mirziyoyev. Should we call him acting president, or due to constitutional breach, which according to many experts, we should use another name for him? So that is like the question is open actually for my colleagues to discuss, I think, because it was very obvious that constitution does not provide such clause that the prime minister can become an acting president.
Obviously.
So, and the constitution was never actually changed or banned or nothing like that. So that's a very one thing that I wanted to throw out first. But yes, indeed, he's acting like president, as I would say, very, very fast. So he's moving on helicopter, which President Karimov would rarely do.
Mm-hmm.
Some even cannot recall when Karimov was ever on helicopter, right?
Okay.
So we barely catching up with him. So he's here, he's there, dismissing here, firing here, and hiring there. Mm. So this is his daily agenda. So he started from his very inner circle, forming his deputies. You know, we had a number of controversial figures reappearing in Uzbek government, such as Abdullah Aripov, a guy who was in the middle of all this huge international corruption scandal with the telecom companies. Also, a number of other ministers who were previously surrounded by allegations of corruption. So then he's traveling from region to region. He, according to our information, again, not confirmed yet, he's not using the security of previous president, like regular president security service. So he's using private security, which allegedly was hired from Russia. So that is also kind of a telling thing. He's not in Karimov's office physically. He's occupying his office, previous office of prime ministers. He started very strange visits and reshuffles. Jizak is not at any of any strategical place for Uzbekistan,
but
except
he,
from cotton growing plantations. Then his yesterday's trip to Angren, city of Angren, again unexplained to that well. Why Angren? What you know, it's not clear, not even strategically important. Then his sweeping operation in one of the Tashkent's district, Mirza Ulugbek district, previously governed by himself. So where he fired the mayor, the prosecutor. You know, some say that this is old connections. These are his own kind of rivalries that he's cleaning from here and there. We don't know, obviously, why particularly these ministers. Uh-huh. One of his first appointments was the Ministry for Education. Again, why he's on the list, you know, among the first, you know, along with the deputy prime minister appointees. That's also a strange sort of a choice. We couldn't get to the bottom of all this, but mm-hmm. apparently these are either his friends or previous acquaintance or previous foes, which are at this point he's dealing with.
Yeah, we definitely will be talking about this and analyzing to find out an answer for the question that you are raising, Alisher. Before to go to other subject, Sohrab, John, Alisher just mentioned that Mirziyoyev brought back some of the controversial names to the government. Any idea who they are, other than being someone who were involved in some sort of corruption or wrongdoing in the past? So what else we know about those controversial names?
I think the names just came up in the last 3 or 4 years when there were rumors actively discussed around Gulnara and her allegations of corruptions among some high-ranked government officials in Uzbekistan. Hmm. I think those people who are brought back at the national government level, per se, Mr. Aripov, Abdullah Aripov, uh-huh. He might have been one of the closest men to Mr. Mirziyoyev, but I wouldn't look for a very deep logic in his current moves. Uh-huh. I don't think Mr. Mirziyoyev have started broad-based reforms yet. Yes, he is already feeling and acting like a president. Even we have like at least 3 months going to the elections. But I think we should be expecting for a much broad-based reforms and his real steps to form up, to set up his own team right after presidential elections. Right now, Mirziyoyev, as a very cautious politician, like Karimov himself had been, he's making his first steps. He knows that the same power groups in Uzbekistan, the power political elite in Uzbekistan, who helped him to reach this position to replace Karimov, all of their eyes are right on him at this point. One mistake, one minor mistake, it could mean an end of career for Mr. Mirziyoyev. That's why I think his first steps in this new role would be really cautious. He won't be making any serious reshuffles or changes, at least in the influential positions, in the power structures, power ministries, so-called power ministries. But we should expect much broader steps and changes right after he becomes a president.
Right. He also let free some other controversial figures recently, like Uzbekistan director of GM and some other people. So what is his interest, his personal interest in all these reshuffles and the decisions that he has taken so far?
Tahir, I think these things are at the very early stage to be analyzed. You know, we haven't seen like massively people going out of prison. You know, the GM, Uzbekistan CEO, former CEO Jalilov's being transferred to home arrest is just initial step, maybe. Maybe, you know, who is Jalilov? He is the professional. I mean, he's the guy who knows the whole system of selling GM cars in Russia. So he is very experienced, qualified person for that job. Mm-hmm. But of course, he had a lot of dubious contracts. For instance, with the Russian banks, he got very huge loans from the banks in Russia, worth of $1 billion. They under the guarantee of National Bank of Uzbekistan. So imagine on what level this was discussed and agreed with Russian banks. You know, sort of. It you can hardly believe that Mr. Jalilov can do it without top government members at that time. But obviously, when Karimov was alive, Jalilov was made a scapegoat and probably, you know, accounting for the all guilt, you know, sort of for himself. So now it's time to pay off Jalilov a little bit by new authorities, probably. That may explain some kind of conspiracies. But again, we haven't seen him out yet. Like, we haven't seen him being off the hook. He just got out on bail, and he's under home arrest.
Right.
So we don't know how it will further evolve. But based on our talks with experts and those who personally knew Mirziyayev, so he's the guy who never forgets any good. If at some point of his life you made him a favor, he always remembers that. So this is one thing about him, what we heard from the formerly close person to him. And at the same time, if someone does bad, he also remembers that.
Right.
So that's the scary part.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Lewis, Bruce, let me bring you guys here in. What we heard so far about his reshuffles from local level administration to high up in the ministry level appointments, and also giving an indication to let go free some people from jail. In your opinion, what he is up to here?
We're deep in the realms of old-style Kremlinology here, really, aren't we? We're looking at who gets appointed, these little glimpses into his everyday travels. But I think there's a, you know, there is a logic to some of this, at least, which is that clearly he now needs to consolidate his power base, and that includes both in Tashkent, in his hometown Jizak, and as much as possible in the regions. Notice he's focusing on the domestic landscape. He's not doing much on foreign affairs, to the CIS summit, for example. He's really focused, I think, on consolidating this power base at home, and we can surely expect a good deal of activity around these major industrial enterprises, around GM and other enterprises, among the different groups vying for power. Remember, you know, there's going to be some level of division of property, even if there's some kind of agreement on the surface. My own opinion is that that level of division can't remain. The logic of this is still that the power consolidates around the president. And that seems to me the way that Mirziyoyev is going. And the question really is, at what point does he extend beyond these relatively low-level appointments that are clearly building up a team of his own? What point does he start to step on the toes of other players, on the Karimov family in particular, probably first in line perhaps in terms of business? And later on, the huge question, of course, of the security services and Mr. Inayatov. So I think there's a logic here, but I think it's obviously quite a dangerous logic. And as was said before, he's quite a cautious politician. He doesn't want to push too hard too early. But he knows he also has to build up a consolidated team. Very interesting details on security there mentioned. Makes lots of sense. Again, not a lot of trust around in those top echelons of Uzbek politics, right? So it's really about building up a team that he can rely on up to the election. And I suggest slightly different is that, you know, he wants to have a team in place that he can rely on ahead of the election. The question for me is, when does he start stepping on the toes of people who are also powerful and have powerful interests?
That's an interesting question. Bruce, what is your reading of this, his logic these days?
Well, I think some of this, Ali Shear kind of touched on it, that some of this is just paying back old favors and or settling old debts. And in the meantime, he's getting some experience and some momentum with dealing with officials at these lower levels. I would agree that we won't see the, you know, the really big moves won't come until later, after he's elected. And on that note, I would also add that I am surprised that he's moving so fast, you know, with elections, admittedly a formality, the way Uzbekistan holds elections. Mm-hmm. But I would have thought that he would have waited until after he was actually officially elected president before he started moving around and doing some of this stuff.
That was our understanding from last debate, right? I mean, we were thinking that he will not move fast, he will be slow in actions and all these things, but he's proving us wrong in this sense.
You know, again, he's not working at real high levels, but like I said, he's kind of getting a feel for how he wants this to work. And so you can see that he's kind of pre-positioning some of the lower level people. And like I said, in some of these cases, you know, Aripov and this other businessman, Gafur, so-called businessman, also underworld figure, Gafur Rahimov, who suddenly vanished from the Interpol list.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that I think that's the most ominous of the signs that have come since in the just the 2 weeks that Mirziyayev has been running the show, is that someone with a fairly well-established background in the criminal world has actually been removed apparently at the Uzbek government's request from you know the Interpol list, and appears to be somebody that's welcome now back in Uzbekistan, and that doesn't speak very well for the ties that government will have to some of these more shadowy groups within the country. But he's moved a lot faster than I thought. You know, like I said, I figured that he would have waited until he was at least formally president instead of this kind of, you know, as Alicia mentioned, he's not, it's unclear exactly what you call him at this point. He is prime minister and he's acting president, but through very strange circumstances, which don't agree with the Constitution. So he appears to have sufficient backing to be moving very, you know, at already early on at this point.
Very interesting questions. Let me push on that a little bit, Sohrab, on reshuffles of the government officials, the ones who were fired, and what criteria seems at play here. Let me be more precise in that. Where he's more focused than others in terms of region, in terms of institutions, it might help us to understand his motives.
In terms of regions, I think it could be key regions in Uzbekistan, which have the most of the influence in the Uzbekistani politics and economic development. I would call it like financial interest groups. This could be Tashkent, Samarkand. I would call Fergana region, Fergana Valley region as one region. So this could be in terms of regions. And in terms of politics, power ministries or power government agencies, I would say it's mainly the law enforcement bloc of the government agencies. I wouldn't expect Mr. Mirziyayev making any changes on the highest level in all those regions very soon. I think part of the reason why, which could also help us understand his first steps in this new role, could also be his current personal preparedness. We know as prepared as Mirziyayev was to replace Karimov someday, and I think I expect he was prepared for this. He was at least seeing and dreaming himself in Karimov's place in any of the days. But still, the first steps that Mirziyayev is taking currently, I think there is also a sensible lack of confidence in his first steps. Let's remember the first years of Karimov in power as a president. He was really inconfident. He wasn't good in speaking Uzbek and addressing people in the native language. He wasn't that confident in his internal politics, in his external politics. It took a while for Karimov to turn into a real Karimov, like very sly, very controversial, and cautious politician who was able to play around with Putin with all big powers. It took a while for Karimov to get to this stage. And I think this could be also part of the personal situation of Mr. Mirziyayev. As prepared he was, but still that was really unexpected. And as I said, as I mentioned before, there are certain political groups and from among the top elite who have helped him, and he wouldn't start his serious reforms, his serious changes very soon. And as David mentioned, even stepping on the toes of other rivals, he wouldn't start it very soon.
Alisher, the fact that he's picking up names so quickly, it makes you believe, and also Sohrab hinted to that, it makes you believe that a list was ready somewhere. Is it your sense?
You know, one of the first analysis that we made in the beginning, if you remember, we said that all of them, they have their own prisoners, right? They have someone in close to them in captivity, you know, because over 25 years, Karimov was imprisoning, putting under prisons their own, their relatives, basically, their kind of friends and associates. And now when they are in power, the first agreement between them could be to release prisoners, to exchange prisoners in a way, yeah? Because under Karimov, no one would argue with Karimov, you know. We know about a number of high-level officials put under home arrest, jailed, but when it came to protect them, Mirziyayev never stepped in and he said, I don't know you know, sort of. And those who are kind of will be released or getting off the hook, they're not necessarily all Mirziyayev's prisoners, you know. They might be those who belong to other groups. So we don't only read it like in okay, Mirziyayev's personal interest in that. For instance, the projected return of Ghafur Bai, yes, Ghafur Rahimov to Uzbekistan. Is he a kind of a in a close connection with Shavkat Mirziyoyev or with someone else? I mean, what was it? How that fit into some agreement? This is all such a dark forest that I don't think that we will learn or know about it somehow credibly investigate that unless they themselves tell us about it. So on Mirziyoyev's cautiousness, I would again I don't see him as a very cautious politician.
That's what I think.
You know, he already proved us wrong in a way that we thought that he would never breach the constitution, but he did. And I think he did it because the agreement was there and they didn't want to wait on it. I mean, let's face the truth. You may come up with some names with different candidates, but Mirziyoyev was the fittest person for this position. He knows the country. He was prime minister for so many years. He's very physically fit, decisive in a way. So this is probably what people are waiting from their leaders. I mean, obviously in Uzbekistan, I'm not praising him in any sense. On the contrary, his style is very, people are very familiar with this kind of style. You know, people respect this kind of speech, you know, decisiveness. They respect this.
That's understandable, Alisha. But again, there is also something called constitution that he is obliged to obey. So that's why his personality, his motives become so interesting for us to talk about. Let's move on.
But on the constitutional part, again, there is no talks about the constitution being breached by on the ordinary people's level, so what we see is just one guy, Akmal Saidov, came out and saying that was all according to constitution, and every media picked up that, and they effectively spread it, this propaganda on people. So there's no debate on that anyway.
Obviously.
Or cannot be.
Obviously, but again, the fact that we know that the Constitution was breached. But moving on, so these are some kind of striking steps, but local steps directed mostly on local issues. So what about his approach on some of the regional issues, Bruce, such as border-related question with Kyrgyzstan or water-related problems with Tajikistan? Do we know anything about his possible approach on those issues, keeping in mind that just until recently there was an ongoing kind of tension because of the presence of Uzbek soldiers in the Kyrgyz soil? How's your reading of his regional approach?
Well, I've actually been pleasantly surprised that he seems to have diffused that. You know, we don't know to what extent he's been involved in it, but of course they did remove the Uzbek policeman from Ungar too, and that solved one problem. And then yesterday, Uzbek media reported that Uzbek Kyrgyz representatives had gone over, I forget what they said, like 23 different sections of the border to try to figure out, if there wasn't some way they could demarcate it. So, and on that, as far as the relations with Kyrgyzstan, he does seem to have moved forward and kind of in a positive way. Tajikistan, we still don't know. He hasn't really made a lot of, I don't remember any statements he's made in particular about the issues there. But we know that whole business of, the Rogun hydropower project and the water that Uzbekistan needed was something that's been, hammered into people's heads in Uzbekistan for a decade as being, absolutely or the wrong move, something that would hurt Uzbekistan, hurt its agriculture, hurt Uzbekistan's people. I find it hard to believe that he'll be able to back down from that in particular. So I would imagine that he would still oppose Ragoon.
David, his approach on military alliances, his views of Russia versus United States and China relations, is there anything to look at in terms of his possible approach, considering that there were lots of talks between Russian leaders and him over the past few days?
Well, he's already repeated the sort of mantra, there will be no foreign bases on Uzbek soil and so forth. But I don't think, that's not very important. I don't think we should expect some kind of really sharp twist in foreign policy. But I do think, building on Bruce's comment there, the idea that rebuilding Uzbekistan as a regional leader rather than this isolated state within the region, which is very much playing second fiddle to Kazakhstan, I would think that would be a goal. I know that it's the kind of thing that a large part of the Uzbek elite would probably like to see, is a better relations with neighbors, certainly. And that would also, open up slightly more opportunities for trade with China. Certainly warmer relations with Russia. I mean, I think losing, this is a slightly different generation, of course, from Karimov. It's not people who really experienced those last years of the Soviet Union when that really strong campaign against Uzbekistan was launched from Moscow. And that generation had this very strong sort of post-colonial view in many ways of Russia. I think, this is a generation that feels much more confident in a way in dealing with Russia. They go there, they do business there. His children, I'm sure, travel there a lot and do business and so on and so forth. So in that sense, it seems to me that there's going to be less of that prickliness around relations with Russia. What I don't see here is any real sense of a shift towards the West or some sense in which the West is going to be prioritized. First, we had, not even the pretense, really, of playing the constitutional game, straight in grabbing the reins of power. Secondly, the return of figures like Gafur, who, of course, is on the U.S. Treasury sanction list, doesn't augur very well for future relations. And, of course, his own reputation as a pretty hardline politician in the past, both regionally and at national level, suggests no let-up in terms of human rights. But I do think... he'll be trying to improve relations within the region and within this, this big Greater Eurasia bloc, within the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and he'll see that as a potential way to boost the economy without opening up too much and following some Western ideas of economic reform.
So you are looking at a guy who might be leaning towards the Eastern bloc in the long run.
Having said that, of course, making predictions here is almost impossible. Mm. That, his first indications, I think the relations to Kyrgyzstan, that is quite promising. Mm. And again, a lot of these border issues were not really driven by genuine security fears. A lot of it just this historical difficulty of dealing with personalities sometimes at the top. So I think there's scope there for him to build up some kind of regional points, win some friends in the region without actually undermining the Uzbek, the closed economy, the Uzbek economic model, at least at the moment. Well, the big question will be whether he can open up the economy, in other words, open up the borders, without effectively undermining the import substitution economic model that's been going on for many years. And I think there's much more doubt.
Thank you, David. And coming back to local issues, Alisher, I think he also kicked off unpopular cotton campaign for this year. It seems that he's confident and he has no worries about the public support of some kind, and considering that the election is coming up.
I mean, again, we should forget about elections, I think, at this point. So we knew about this from the very beginning. I keep saying that there's no such thing as elections and cannot be. So and if you look at the other candidates, so you can clearly read this. Yeah,
we are going to talk about the election in the second half of the program.
Right. I mean, we don't even need to discuss this. I mean, you look at candidates and you'll see that these candidates are guys who used already by President Karimov, and they used exactly the same way as Mirziyoyev is using them now. So this is purely kind of non-existent stuff. So
cotton,
regarding your
cotton campaign,
Yeah, regarding your questions on cotton campaign, this is, nothing is connected to elections and nothing is connected to world opinion about him, Western opinion. Everything and nothing, this is very simple analysis. Mirziyoyev, what he needs from neighbors, from Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, he needs water because he is a cotton guy. If they give him water, that's no problem. That's it, what he needs. There's no such thing like intergovernmental kind of exchanges, people suffering, blah, blah. All this, like, this is water, and if he gets the water, that's the end of his kind of aims in the region, with Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan in particular. as we discussed that. And on the cotton issue, he needs cotton because they need to sell it. They need to get money. And it, again, the child labor issue was eradicated a little bit, but we have a worse situation with the forced labor.
Nice.
So we get the latest information, we get the children not going for cotton, but their parents now asked to collect money to support laborers who would pick cotton for themselves. Mm. So it's kind of a children just not going to cotton. That's the only change what happened under Karimov and under Mirziyev. But all the rest, all the other things, they are stays the same. The same forced labor, even on in some cases in the worst sort of forms, and you know, cotton also turned into some ideology. Yeah, so the stuff that the thing that would unite the whole nations around one big kind of giant project like picking cotton. They call it the wedding for everybody. Yeah,
is it so, the way it is considered by people?
This is the way it is being sold to people. Oh. And I can hardly imagine a year without cotton, that then nobody's is it's for the past 25 years and 60 years before that. Yeah, that was a cotton issue. It was a cotton time. Imagine you take out the toy, yeah, from these kids now. I don't know what they're gonna do with this. So they were crying when they lost their beloved president Karimov. They would probably cry to lose cotton at this point. Maybe in the Western world, you read everything from the prism of upcoming elections, yeah. So everything, like whatever, all the steps you describe with upcoming elections, nothing like this in Uzbekistan.
Right.
He is already president, yeah. So there is nothing that would be any hurdle for him to become a president. It's all, everything is already down, settled, decided, and it's just formality things. He could have become president tomorrow, but they need to do this formality and they're waiting this.
Thank you very much, Alisher. Just to recap, today in the Majlis, we are talking about Mirziyoyev's early steps to understand what awaits for Uzbekistan, about his direction. Discussing the subject with me are Sohrab Ismailov, an independent observer and legal expert, and Dr. David Levis, senior lecturer at the Exeter University, Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbekistan service, and Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlog Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. In this part of the Majlis, although Alisher downplays that, let's talk a little bit about the development surrounding the upcoming elections, which is scheduled for December 4th. How big deal is this in Uzbekistan? Are we witnessing, at least on the surface, any kind of election atmosphere? What are the news you are getting from there? Sohrab, Alisher, jump in, whoever wants to.
Sohrab, maybe you.
Sohrab?
Yeah, I think there is no difference from the previous election preparations, which were under former president, Mr. Karimov. And we can already see the same faces nominated by the four political parties in Uzbekistan. And I think the level of elections in this year, it would be the same at the last level of elections. Mm. And we just heard from the OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the Democratization Bureau, that they are thinking about sending their mission of observers to Uzbekistan. But before that, they said they will study whether it's worth it. This is already sending some signals, because maybe they're not seeing any logic in this, because the same results could be expected.
At least they are pretending this is an election time in the country.
Usually there's no such thing as like election campaigns. They will have some 1 minute promos, and they'll run it on televisions and they'll host a couple of shows, but that's it. Like, it's completely something different. Yeah, it's completely, it's just it's something that's not even worth talking about. If we would see among candidates a person like Azimov, yeah, among candidates for presidency, or some other strong former ministers, Ganiev, maybe, I don't know, some, maybe the President Karimov's son-in-law, I don't know, Timur Tilyaev, maybe his daughter, maybe someone else. So there we could see about, you know, oh, they don't decide it yet, or there could be some kind of hot thing, yeah, to discuss. But if you look at it now, it's like Mirziyayev, and then people whom even their own neighbors doesn't know, yeah?
Tell us a little bit more. Who are they?
I don't want to tell about it, you know, because I don't know anything about
them. Nobody knows
them.
Yeah.
And nobody knows about them except from their names. These names became a joke in Uzbekistan. So it's already a done deal, yeah, for Mirziyayev. It's just formality. They just need it. And the elections could be fair and open, and they can even count fairly. But with all that, OSCE mission will just learn that there was not enough competition. And besides that, when Mirziyayev was appointed as acting prime minister, some of these guys already spoke out in the parliament supporting Mirziyayev's candidacy for acting prime minister. It's like even the show is getting even worse with that. So we don't expect any election, and we don't plan any to give it big coverage at all. So we just go ahead with the Mirziyayev himself, his background, his psychological mood. That is what would matter in Uzbekistan, because the guy is coming with absolute power. He is de facto president. He is prime minister, and because they didn't change a constitution, he can be considered a chairman of Senate, because constitution said that you can read the constitution from up to bottom, right? So so he's the chairman of Senate in that sense of constitution. So he holds absolute power, and what would matter is his character, is his. Is he prone to have a cult of personality? Right. Whether he is harsh, whether he's psycho, whether he's good guy or bad guy, that would what matter for Uzbekistan for the upcoming at least 20 years of his power.
Ali,
can I come in there just with a comment?
Yeah, sure, David.
You know, obviously the election is nonsensical. I mean, it's a ritual, as it was in Soviet time, of public showing of support. But I think there is an interesting question: does he really have absolute power in the informal sense? And the big question seems to be: can Uzbekistan carry on as what it looks like at the moment, which is a kind of oligarchy in which Rustam Inayatov runs the security services? Azimov retains quite considerable control over parts of the economy, and Mirziyayev fulfills a sort of arbitration role as chief president. I personally, it seems to me that may be unsustainable over the long term, and that suggests that even after the elections, there's going to be a good deal of infighting. And of course, bear in mind, you know, the Karimov family themselves, Timur Tilyaev and others who have strong interests in the economy as well. These are all important players, and I suggest that behind the scenes, I'm not quite so sure that this is completely resolved as we might expect, which would explain the speed, really, with which the acting president is moving forward with visits to regions, is trying to put in control these new appointments and so forth, emphasizing Cotton, of course. Cotton, as was mentioned, not just an economic issue, but also a method of control, right? You reassert control over cotton. It's very important. So I think the interesting question is, what is going on behind the scenes? Is this all really done and dusted? We had a very interesting little vignette, and I'd love to hear others' comments on this, of Mr. Inayatov meeting the UAE Interior Minister for the first time. I think a video of Mr. Inayatov meeting somebody at the airport must be quite a rare event. And sort of presenting himself in public as if he is saying, well, I'm still in charge, perhaps, don't worry. So I think there are some interesting things going on. We have very little idea of what they are exactly. But I'd suggest there's still a bit of infighting to go before we're absolutely sure that this is simply further 20 years in power for Mr. Mirziyoyev.
And if I could just jump in too, because David also made a point there that I thought was it relevant to this, that we know there's going to be some infighting and likely almost unavoidable in the future. The elections, as much as we know that they're probably going to be a total sham and nothing to it, there has to be some legitimacy that leader of the country can fall back on. And whether they're good elections or bad elections, what they inevitably fall back on is, I was elected by the people. I'm the constitutionally elected president of the country. And when you are in a situation where there's disruption within the inner circle, or whether your legitimacy is questioned from outside, this is your base plate, and this is what you keep falling back on, is the fact that I held elections in my country and I won. Again, we know it's a joke. Two of the three candidates running against him ran against Karimov in the last election, and the one that the third candidate, who's not running this time, is exactly the person who tried to justify the fact that Mirziyoyev, Akmal Saidov, who justified the fact that Mirziyoyev could be appointed the acting president, bypassing the chairman of the Senate. And just as, I suppose, just for a good anecdote, Ketmonov, who was, and he's actually from the People's Democratic Party of Uzbekistan, HDP, which was the former Communist Party. But after he lost to Karimov, I think he was one of the first people to come forward and say, this was an absolutely free and fair election. And he didn't even bother to mention that he lost. He just said, no, everything was done the way it's supposed to be, according to democracy. So, these are the level of the opponents that he's facing. But it is important that he has... that Mirziyoyev will be able to say, I was up for election, I was elected by the people, and that is why I'm the legitimate leader of this country.
I believe the question of legitimacy is at play here. Even by his invitation to OSCE to come to monitor the elections, considering that it will only expose the Uzbek authorities to international scrutiny. Though I know, Alisher, that you don't take this entire process serious. So
can I jump in?
Sure.
I think it was earlier mentioned by Alisher that although the elections would be democratic in the sense of the letter of laws and regulations, all the procedures would be followed. Maybe in that sense, I think any observer, whoever comes from any country, even the CIS, Commonwealth of Independent States, are sending their own observers. Any observer would find elections compliant to the letter of the laws and regulations in current Uzbekistan. Mm. There wouldn't be any flaws or mistakes on this side. But still, I think even on this, Mr. Mirziyoyev would be continuing former President Karimov's policies. For the last maybe 10 years, the Uzbek government, the Uzbek authorities have really learned well the language of international human rights. There was even a special department created under the Ministry of Foreign Affairs who will teach the Uzbek diplomats how to argue with their colleagues in different conferences, like which are looking at the situation in Uzbekistan, at the OSCE, at the UN committees on human rights. And government has been really paying attention, at least to change the rhetoric, public rhetoric, and trying to teach the public officials who are representing Uzbekistan on the international arena to speak the language of human rights and to defend the Uzbek interests, so-called Uzbek interests.
Right.
And from this sense, I think the all upcoming elections and the new laws and regulations which will be made under Mr. Mirziyoyev, they will all be just a part of a big game. They will be getting better and better in speaking in this language, but without any real changes, real improvements in the country, inside the country.
Okay, Alisher, in your opinion, that he will win? At what percentage he will win, Alisher?
That would depend on his psychological situation. You know, it's I just reiterate, you know, everything will depend on his personality, on the psychological part of his kind of you are from Turkmenistan, you know that Niyazov is not terribly different from Berdimuhamedov. Yeah, and in this case we are talking about guys who even were closer to each other. For de facto, Mirziyayev was running the country for the past at least 5 years or even 10 years. He was running the country. There's nothing new about his style. He learned everything from his father, as he describes him, President Karimov. So he said, "He's my father. I will continue his work." That was sincere, I believe. Yeah. The only thing to what level he becomes crazy with such power? Yeah. So would he allow a cult of personality? This is very worrying me personally, because Karimov was the guy who run the country, but never allowed in a certain way cult of personality. Mm. You cannot name a street after him, except after his death, or you cannot do very crazy things. So just for Mirziyayev is just for Uzbeks, as many Uzbeks feel. So would we save our faces? We don't go down to the level of Turkmenistan or North Korea, bowing and kneeling. Yeah. So this is the major thing that concerns people. Yeah, we know that nothing will change on economy, on politics. Nobody will get richer. They said they will not allow any rich people anyway.
You know, in this sort of discussion, it's very, very hard to end the debate with a positive note. Is there anyone who can jump in and say a few things positive about all what is happening these days or in upcoming days in Uzbekistan?
Yeah, that's very difficult, I think. I don't think very much will change, but I think the question, if the Uzbek elite wants things to stay the same, they're going to have to change some things, right? Because at the moment, it seems to me, this is going to be a difficult system to sustain over 5 or 10 years. And I think it may not be about relations with the West. I think the interesting thing will be whether Uzbekistan starts opening up more to China, and the pressure from China to open up the border and open up the economy. It may be more effective than the pressure from international organizations like the IMF. So I think the interesting thing will be relations with China, and it may be that some economic improvement could come from the East rather than from the West. But that's my only potentially positive point. And also, yes, I do think some of the prickliness in relations in the region, some of these very difficult border issues with Kyrgyzstan, the first signs are that those could be resolved, and that that would be a huge step forward in terms of regional relations. In terms of domestic policy, I can't see any improvement. In fact, I'm quite pessimistic about the internal situation.
Okay, Dr. David Lewis, senior lecturer at the Exeter University, thank you very much for your insightful analysis. Unfortunately, we have to conclude our discussion here, but it has been a very wonderful, fascinating discussion. Also, very big thanks goes to Sukhrov Ismailov, an independent observer and legal expert. He is also founder of Expert Working Group, human rights NGO, back in his days in Uzbekistan. Thank you very much, Sukhrov, for being part of the Majlis today. And big thanks goes to Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Uzbek service, and Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you, gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you very much.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis. Hope to meet you in the next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.